said before, when Biden was thinking about letting Ukraine have Tomahawk missiles, which in the end he decided he shouldn't do because Putin launched the Oreshnik, that the base in Poland may be a possible target, the next step up the escalation ladder. But one of the sort of thoughts I have is that Putin, in some respects, he doesn't need to escalate with Europe because Europe is falling apart anyway. He's happy to kind of maintain a low attrition warfare in Ukraine while Europe collapses in on itself. Do you share that kind of view or not?
I think Russia could do much more to help Europe along its path, and it should, because again, Europe is doing everything it can to destroy Russia internally. So what comes around goes around. I don't like to say Europe, because Russia is one third of Europe. Russia owns and has always owned the biggest chunk of Europe anybody's ever had. We were even in Kievan Rus times, and before that, we were the biggest part of Europe, a European state anywhere. So I would say it's not Europe, it's the EU or the NATO bloc, whichever way you want to look at it. And even the EU is not the EU, because thankfully, I guess cultural differences do matter. The Austro-Hungarian bloc obviously has decided, nah, we're not interested in suicide pact number three. For we've been down this road, as Orban said, we've been down this road twice before. We're not going down a third time. Have fun, bye bye. We'll talk to you later if you survive. And the rest of the former, well, the majority of the former Austro-Hungarian Empire seems to be going in the same direction with the same mindset. Thanks. We may not like the Russians, but we don't want to fight them, and we can do business with them. If you psychos want to go exterminate yourself on the Russian tank treads, that's not our problem. That's your problem. But the Germans can't seem to break away from their Middle Europe concept, and they can't, and they still look at everything that's west of the Volga as their colonial space, their Lebensraum, which again wasn't something Hitler created. That was a mindset that was coming around back in the 1890s. Now they're looking at in all those areas as that's going to be our colonies. Well, no, it's not. That's thank you. That's claimed land for the last 2,000 years. That's one of those points, and I've made it many times. There is no Russian benefit from a united Europe. Because whenever Europe starts to unite, it always starts looking east, and it's always war for us. It's much better when you have individual nations you can deal with that are looking out for their own self-interest, not some elite self-interest that has nothing to do with their people's self-interest, but has to do with their glory and economic wealth and everything else for this elite, an Epstein elite. But again, I mean, seriously, we're dealing. Glenn Deason asked me about, I guess it was about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. What do you think about, chances of making peace with the Europeans, with the European elite coming to some kind of conclusion over Ukraine? Like, how? I mean, look at the people who are sitting in power. These are the Epstein elites. I mean, we should never allow that nomenclature to slide into obscurity, because that is the very definition of who we're dealing with. These are people that will literally murder and eat the children of their own people. When you're getting to that level, everybody else is just everybody else is just biomatter for these people. If their own nation is biomatter for them, what are they going to do to anybody else's nation that's even lower on the rung? I mean, this is the people we're dealing with. This is quite literally the elites in the West that we're dealing with. How do you speak to them? Well, either by throwing lots of money at them and being their vassal, or by putting a knife under their, or a dagger under their throat and explain to them what else might happen. That's the only thing they understand, unfortunately to say. You can't negotiate with people like this. They're always looking how to get you one way or the other. Well, yeah, it's better if they don't have to get you through war. Put you on your knees to war and exploit you. But when there was an interesting little documentary I watched, I guess about 10 years ago, it was in Israel, and they were teaching a class on the Holocaust. And when they do that, it was 10th grade, I guess, Israeli school. They bring in a person who survived the Holocaust. Not that many of them left, but there's still some. And this old grandmother was sitting there listening to the class, and she asked him after the class, "So what did you learn?" It's like, "Oh, yeah, you should respect other people. You shouldn't, mass murder." I guess the Israeli government didn't quite learn that, but all these things. And she's like, "No, you didn't learn anything. When someone tells you they want to kill you, you believe them. They may not have the capability of doing it right now, but they have the intent. So you have one of two choices: either grab your family and run, or grab your rifle and go and attack." And all we hear in Russia from the leadership in the West is "death to Russia." In oh so many words, they may not say "death to Russia." "We're going to break you economically. We're going to put you on your knees. We're going to what the French say. We're going to rip the Russian economy to shreds." Then you get the maps of, "We're going to decolonize Russia," and they're like 10, 15, 20, 40 governments, depends whose flights are fancy. You get the Finns, the Finnish nationalist groups that are basically in power now. Their fantasies of empire, the more modest ones just go out to Arkhangelsk, to the more insane ones. They're all insane, but the more insane ones, they claim everything out to Kamchatka. Like, 6 million Finns are gonna fill in. Just that alone, it tells you how insane they are. But this is what you see, and this is what you hear from people in power. So that they don't have the capability right now doesn't mean they won't have the capability, say, in 5 years or 3 years or next year, depending what happens. Geopolitics works like that. Any internal problems in Russia, they will all jump on that instantly. So you're looking at an enemy that really wants to kill you. They just can't do it right now. So what is the Russian government supposed to do? What is Russian society supposed to do at this point? If they don't change, then they need to be changed. Preferably by their own people, but if not, then externally, because they have now, while screaming Russia's a threat, we want to destroy Russia, they made sure Russia will be a threat, because now you're really threatening Russia. Like anybody else, if your neighbor constantly tells you, "I'm going to come over your house and kill you, I'm going to come over your house and take all your furniture out of your house, I'm going to come over the house and break your family up," sooner or later you start to understand, even though he's saying that he hasn't done it, that he may do that. And then what's your choice? You arm up and maybe go over there and preempt him. But that's Europe is going to create its own, or the European Union, NATO, is going to create its own downfall, because it's creating the conditions it supposedly fears by making sure that the other side keeps hearing, "We're going to kill you, we're going to kill you, we're going to kill your children, we're going to kill your country, we're going to kill you." And that's what's heard constantly from the West. There's no, "Hey, maybe we can live together," or, "Okay, we don't like each other, put a wall up, you stay on your side." We say, you don't hear that. You constantly hear from the West, "We've got to get them, we've got to get them." Hitler, by the way, when he went to the Reichstag, because after all he was chancellor, so he had to at least go formally through that Republican process, and he's laid out his reasons for Barbarossa. His march, Dragunov, the official reason was, "Any day now, Stalin's going to invade me, invade Europe. So we've got to get him first." And that's what, by the way, Russia knows its history quite well. It's seen this game before. And it's a question of, when they say Russia's going to invade us in 2 years, the read between the lines, so we're going to have to hit them in 1 year. And that's what's being understood in the Russian leadership, particularly the younger Russian leadership, the 50-somethings, 40-somethings, that are going to be coming up into power in the next generation. That's what they're hearing. That's what they're seeing. They don't have the same 1990s ties that other people had, with the mass corruption that was in Russia. All these people, they don't have those ties with Europe. They're nationalist, and they're really upset. So again, either Europe changes its rhetoric and rethinks its position, or it's on a collision course off a cliff that it's not going to get back up off. Like it or not, that's what it is.
Yeah, no, I'm unfortunately I agree with you, particularly that the kind of current leaders that we have are just incapable of having any sort of normal relationship with Russia. Not von der Leyen, certainly not Starmer, not Merz, not Macron. Although they may all be gone within the next 2 years, but we might all be gone within the next 2 years too. Hopefully, hopefully we won't.
We're back.
But thank God for the Belgian Prime Minister who's come out to say, we should have a normalized relationship with Russia. I mean, good old Bart De Wever, he's probably my favorite European politician from a very short list, right now. I mean, what do you make of that? Is that playing in Russian media, that story?
That is playing in Russian media, but it's very timid the way it's playing still, because what happened to him instantly? Every other it's like it's the Orban effect. You said what? Okay, you're enemy of the great project of Europe now. We're gonna get rid of you as soon as possible. Now, if he is staying power, that's something else. I mean, look, when Russian politicians look at Orban, they understand he's not an ally of Russia. He may become one day an ally of Russia if it fits him. By the way, with Ukraine now, and that's another subject in a second. But he's looking at self-interest of his country, so he's predictable. Predictable is good in geopolitics. Predictable is great in geopolitics. He's predictable, so we know he's looking out for his country. We can understand what the values or what the needs of the country is, and we can come to some kind of conclusion on what we can, what we can arrange in some kind of a mutual exchange or something else. Because we understand where you're coming from, we understand your ideology, we understand your needs. Okay, we can negotiate. When you're dealing with people who don't give a damn about their countries, they have some, the van der Leyens, the Merzes, and these other psychopaths. You can't deal with these people. I mean, on what common ground can you find except, oh, we're going to walk out in the middle of Red Square and all commit mass suicide? Will that be okay with you? Oh, okay. Well, we found common ground. Okay. So, how do you speak to people like that? You don't speak to people like that. They understand fear and they understand greed. And they don't give a damn about their own countries or the people in their countries. Orban, Fitso, people like that, yeah, you can deal with them. Boss, was it Czechoslovakia? Basic? No, not me. Yeah. I mean, people like that, you can understand, you can read them, you can understand what they want, and then you can come to some kind of conclusion, some kind of mutual agreement that's beneficial for all parties.
Babbage.
That's good. Babbage, and that's it, Babbage. And that's the problem, by the way, with Trump is you really can't figure out what the hell he wants or who's influencing him for this half hour. Who's the last one to whisper in his ear? Frick, man. You have to have some serious spy work just to keep the list of who's spoken his ear last to figure out what we're going to talk about next. I mean, that's political ambiguity that that Macron has prized and the Americans are now implementing is very bad in geopolitics. It's even worse when geopolitics has nuclear weapons. Is he going to go for a first strike? Because the logic of first strike, which America seems to be too stupid to understand, the politicians anyways, there's plenty of Americans have been saying this, like McGregor and others. As long as you keep a first strike doctrine, even if I have a second strike doctrine, the logic, the military geopolitical logic I have is I'll exterminate you the first chance I have just to make sure you don't strike me first, because that's your official position to strike me first. So it means the moment I'm weak enough, you're going to strike. So I've got to strike you. That's the reality of geopolitics. If everybody goes, that's a re response only, nobody first strikes, everybody takes a deep breath. Okay, well, nobody's going to go nuclear, so okay, we can live with this. But if one guy is, any day now, I'm just going to put a bullet in your head, well, everybody's grabbing their rifles and going, as soon as it turns around and looks that way, I'm going to shoot him. That's the reality of it. That's the reality of human nature. It's the reality of geopolitics. So, how do you deal with people like that?
I mean, you will get rid of them, hopefully, through preferably through democratic means, quite frankly. But on Orban, I agree with you, actually. And I went to Budapest twice last year. I mean, I actually think the whole Iran thing is going to kind of and this ridiculous standoff with Zelensky, who I don't know what Zelensky's thinking over the Druzhba, pipeline, quite frankly, is idiotic. I mean, he just wants to buy time to kind of get Orban out of the way, and get Sir Peter Magyar behind sanctions and everything else. $90 billion for the war, effort. But I think the Iran war is just going to fix more in the minds of ordinary Hungarian people that Orban is probably on the right track. I mean, that's just my sense. I think the Iran war is just going to add to his appeal amongst ordinary Hungarian voters. That's just my sense of it. I mean, what's your sense?
Well, I have a friend who's well connected, well up in the elites in Georgia, and I was having a talk with him. It's like the Georgian elites are in a panic because they're trying they're passive Russophobes because they're making money off this and all, but they're anti-Russian still somehow like that. And they're watching their benefactor have its teeth beaten into it down his throat on a daily basis. They're starting to figure out that Oh, shit. America's not going to be here to protect us. Now, who do we have around us? We have Iran, who's, well, they're still far enough away and somewhat pissed off with Azerbaijan. Probably won't invade because Iran hasn't started a war in 200 years. America hasn't started a war in like 2 months. Or I'm sorry, they just
3 weeks.
did. You know, that's, yeah. Yeah, they haven't started a new war in 3 weeks. You know, the American standard. Screaming Iran is a threat. It's like looked in a mirror lately. The Turks who are looking at, and quite frankly, speaking of Georgia as former part of the Ottoman Empire, which the Georgians sure as hell don't want to be ever part of again. Or you have the Russians. So you know, you have to start thinking. Well, and if the Europeans were half as bright as the European elite as they try to make themselves out to be, at this point, they would all be going, yeah, Uncle Sam ain't going to be there for us. And he's not. I will tell any European who's deluded enough to think that if it ever comes to nuclear weapons, there is no way in hell the U.S. would sacrifice even Oklahoma City or Arkansas City, which are tiny little cities that's like 200,000 people, for London, for Paris, for Berlin, or any other European city, no matter what the population. It will never happen. You're on your own, gentlemen. We're out. Guaranteed 100%. America will never sacrifice any of its own land for any what. I mean, you know what the American jargon is for Western Europeans amongst the common people?
Go
It's not a pretty jargon. You're a trash. That's what they
on.
call Western Europeans. You're a trash. Welcome to reality. That's not even Eastern European. I don't know. You know, that's even worse. But for Western Europeans, if you talked about the average guy on the street in some small town that can barely read and write, he'll tell you they're a bunch of Euro trash. So believe you, America is not going to sacrifice any of its cities for any European country or any European city. That's the reality of it. So and. The Arabs just learned that. They've been told that for years. It's one thing to hear it. It's another thing to actually, to accept it. And they're getting it accepted to them by hypersonic missiles and ballistic missiles. And I'll tell you, from what I've been told by very good sources, the Saudis have told the American military, go screw yourself. We're neutral. Survive however you survive. You know, we're not coming to aid you. We're not coming to get you off these bases. That's it. It's your problem, not ours. And that's in their case, it's a smart thing to do, make sure their nation survives. So I would suggest for the European Union to start seriously looking at reality the way it is. The American Empire is much more of a paper target tiger than anybody wanted to believe. And when if they go into a stupid mode and land Marines on the south on the northern shores of the Straits of Hormuz, I invite everybody to review a village called Krynki. Well, actually, there is no village called Krynki anymore. It's been razed down to the basements. And the Ukrainians lost two battalions of Marines that got turned into meat over a period of about 4 months, trying to hold that village after they grabbed it coming across the Dnieper River. This is just going to be writ large on there. So the Iranians are waiting. They want the Americans to land. They want a land operation because then they're going to have the people in their hands to slaughter. And they've been preparing for this for 20 years. If the Americans are crazy enough to do that, that's just going to be the end of Trump, period. I mean, and you can tell they're desperate when they're demanding the Chinese come in there as part of this armada to say to open the Straits of Hormuz. Well, China's getting oil out of Strait of Hormuz anyways. So did Pakistan just now had a tanker to go in. So it all depends whose side you're on. You know, that's kind of how it works. And they're demanding all the Europeans send whatever ships they can and dinghies and whatever else to open the straits. They're not doing it themselves, by the way, if you notice. It's too dangerous for us. It's your Euro vassals. You will go and die there for us. We'll just sit back and see what happens. I mean, that's basically what they're telling everybody. Oh, the French seem to want to send their eight frigates out to become scrap metal. I mean, there's no survival chance coming across that those straits if the Iranians want to take you out. And considering you can do that with FPV drones with RPG rounds underneath them for, a $3,000 drone and send a couple hundred of them at once in a wave, you'll get through and do enough damage to maybe not sink a destroyer, but damn well damage it enough that it has to leave. And this is what, you know, you put up a couple hundred kids with VR goggles up under some trees, up in the mountains, and the mountains are right there past the coast, and they're just playing a game. Let's see who gets through to the destroyer. Oh, one life done. Let's get the next drone up. But that's the reality of modern technology. When you're looking for the big missile launcher, you've got to worry about that 15-year-old kid whose parents you just murdered, or whose brother or sister you just murdered. He's going for revenge with that little joystick and a drone with an RPG round underneath it. That's the reality of modern combat.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I 100% agree. And the UK only has one ship. It seems a lot, and that took ages to deploy. And the scandal with that was that, it kind of so many left. They were under huge pressure to say that it had left Portsmouth. This one destroyer, all the others were in refit. All the five others were in refit, and it spent 4 days in the English Channel having more fixes done to it. It didn't even leave. It was still being fixed. It didn't go anywhere for 3 days. But it had to leave to set sail. It's quite remarkable. I mean, how
With the
can
check
Trump?
mark as well.
Yeah, how can Trump get out? Can Trump get out of this now? I mean, he has to find an up for him. More and more, even in the US, more and more politicians and media figures are saying the Americans have to kind of find an off-ramp out of this, and the Iranians say, "Well, fuck it, we don't want to, excuse my language, we don't want to negotiate with you now." So that means they just have to pull back or just carry on and just continue to get hammered. I mean, what can Trump do now, in your assessment?
I've got like 3 minutes.
Yeah,
I've
no
got
worries, no worries.
another interview. Well, look, he's screwed no matter what. And now it's just a question of how screwed is he? How screwed is he? Well, let's see. If he cuts and runs, he can declare, get an aircraft carrier like Bush and declare mission accomplished. And MAGA will probably buy that up, at least half of MAGA. That's the MAGA that's left. Doesn't give a damn what Trump does because it's their guy. They'll buy it up. They'll buy up anything else he's spewed out. Yeah, of course he's lost half his base that spat in his direction, turned around, walked off. The Republicans are still gonna lose and take a hammering in November, but maybe they can still pull something out. Yeah, November is still 6 months off, basically. So there's still some chance that it may be a hammering, but not a total bloodbath. The longer he stays, the worse things get, and the faster everybody realizes the king's not only got no doesn't have any clothes on, he doesn't have any skin on him either. He's been skinned alive by the Iranians and everybody else. So at this point, how bad do you want it? Do you want to be gelded like a gelding, or do you want to at least walk out with some manhood still hanging between your legs, to put it in a crude way? That's what the Americans have. They land troops on the ground. I mean, they got 2,000 men cut off in Iraq in three bases. These guys are running out of ammunition. They're going to be running out of provisions. They don't want to talk about it. These guys are under fire constantly. They've been just left out to hang. The green zone's huge. It's being hammered. Their anti-aircraft system, their Phalanx systems, one of them was taken out by a drone yesterday, or the day before yesterday. I'm sorry. The same systems they put on ships, it's gone. They're getting hammered. And the Iranian, I mean the Iraqi militias and basically army or Shia are fighting straight out. You're going into a hostile country to get them out, and the longer they hold, the bigger disaster this is going to be. I mean, I understand they want to. If you have to send an armored convoy, I don't know where they're going to send it from. Turkey is probably the only place, and they have to gather it fast enough. You send them in there to get these people out on buses, what have you. It's going to look really, really bad. But their hope is that this will all be over soon. But for some reason, this is not all going over. So if you don't get them out and they get slaughtered, or you see videos of corpses lying around and all these surrendered diplomats and everybody else, that's going to be a PR disaster from hell. And that my Trump may not actually walk out of the White House a free man one of these days soon. I mean, it's just a matter of how much of a risk you want to take. But Trump seems to be the guy. I mean, he's been told he's the Messiah writ large, or the apostle of the Messiah. He's going to lead to Armageddon and all this other crap to
Well, there we
the
go.
Christian Zionist heretics have beaten him to his head, and he loves being fawned over. So I don't know. I don't. He seems to be doubling down. he's flailing around. I mean, that's obvious enough. Cutting down, you know, freedom of the press, cutting down visuals, trying to strong arm everybody else to go die for him. All these other countries are going, "Nah, thanks, no." I don't think he has a way out, and he doesn't know what to do, because, you know, swallowing your pride and just basically cutting and running. Oh, and that'll also piss off the donor class, the donor owner class. Whoops, because, you know, you'd have to cut and run with Aya from Israel too.
Yeah.
Well, the wage of sin.
I agree. Yeah, you screwed either way. I mean, I said that for a while as well. I completely agree. But anyway, you got a rush. Thanks so much, Stanislav, for joining today. As always, please subscribe to my channel if you find these conversations insightful. I personally thought that was fascinating in terms of the Russian sort of mindset, you know, right now. So as always, let's do this again soon. And thanks so much for joining today. And my name is Ian Pratt. I'm the Peacemonger. Thank you so much.